I'm Howie Silberger. This is Political Hitman here on Israel News Talk Radio. So happy to be here, and I am happy that you have chosen to join me right here on Israel News Talk Radio. Check out the website, IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com. That's IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com. So it's been a long time since October 7th, over a year and a couple of months. Hostages are still being held in Gaza. Now, there have been a lot of fake news reports recently saying that those hostages are, the release of the hostages are imminent, that the deals could be made. And I'm wondering, is there really a way to make a deal when it comes to lives? Like, what kind of deal could you possibly make when it comes to human life? The deal should be release the hostages, period. That should be the deal. There should be no other deal, but that's not how hostage takers work. I know that. I understand the concept of hostage taking and the concept of the fact that hostage takers are there to pressure other people. What bothers me about the hostages, the Israeli hostages, aside from the fact that there are Israeli hostages, what really bothers me is that the world in general doesn't care. Nobody cares about the hostages. Back in the 1970s, during the Vietnam War, when POWs were taken, prisoners of war were taken in Vietnam, there were mass protests, release the prisoners of war. There was diplomatic pressure put on the Vietnamese to release the prisoners of war. Soldiers and armies vowed that they wouldn't leave Vietnam until the Vietnam POWs were freed. And they eventually got most of the Vietnam POWs freed. I think almost 100% of them were freed by the end of the war. And this was done out of strength, not out of weakness. Out of pure strength, saying, look, you know, we want our people back, and we're going to get them back either by force, by might, or you're just going to give them up, but we're getting them back. There was very little negotiation. There was very little deals to be made when it came to getting back, repatriating your citizens that are being held, your soldiers that are being held, your people that are being held. Israel always tends to fumble the ball. And this is my biggest criticism of Israel, is that the Israeli government always tends to fumble the ball because they are too reliant on what the world thinks of them and what America thinks of them. Years ago, I attended a conference, and Yossi Beilin was the keynote speaker at this conference. And at the time, he was the foreign minister of the State of Israel. And I've never agreed with anything Yossi Beilin has ever said in his entire political career. But I will tell you that during that conference, he got up publicly and said, listen, Israel does not need money from the diaspora. We don't need aid from any other country. Our GDP, our gross domestic product, is high enough that we are able to sustain ourselves. We don't need help from anybody. So don't bother buying Israel bonds. Don't bother with loan guarantees. Nobody cares. We don't need it. Our industry is big enough in the country that we could support ourselves, and we don't need the help of anybody else. Our military-industrial complex is big enough that we could produce our own weapons and our own machinery. We don't need anybody. That's what he said. I was there. I heard it. So what happened? Why is Israel dependent on other countries? What happened to their independence? If in the late 90s or mid-90s, Israel was independent, as Yossi Beilin said they were, why would they now be cowing? And why have they cowed to American pressure before? It doesn't make sense. It's not logical. Hundreds of people were taken hostage on October 7th. The Israeli military, in its might, could have found the hostages by now. Chances are they know where they are. They haven't taken the hostages. They haven't released the hostages. They haven't saved the hostages. Because they're afraid of civilian casualties. They're afraid of killing civilians. And of course, we know Hamas embeds itself in the heart of civilians. And they're afraid. They're afraid of the world ruckus if one civilian dies when they're saving a hostage. Or if one hostage dies by accident. They're afraid of the ruckus. It's not the way a country should be. It's not the way a government should be. Now, I've been no big fan of Bibi Netanyahu. And I've made no bones about it on this show that I'm not a big Netanyahu fan. But at the same time, I believe that the Israeli government has a responsibility to repatriate their people. And although they say we're trying, I understand trying. But trying is not succeeding. And Israel has a reputation of always succeeding. Until now. And now they're failing. Now, are they failing? Will the rest of the hostages be released? Are any of them still alive? Your guess is as good as mine. We're told that there are some hostages that are still alive. Some of them are dead. But how many are alive, how many are dead, nobody really knows. I don't even think the people who left in Hamas know. Meanwhile, in Syria, the Assad regime fell. Bashar al-Assad took off and went to hide in Russia. And now reports are out that Israel's looking for the body of Eli Cohen, the Israeli spy that went to Syria. Will they find him? Who knows? It just seems like a waste of resources at the moment to be looking for Eli Cohen's body. Syria is about to explode. Turkey is about to raid Syria. There'll be another hostile country on the border of Israel. Do we know where this is going? Absolutely not. I don't believe, not even for one second, that there should be any negotiations for hostages. I've believed from the beginning, from when all the hostages were taken, that sometimes you don't negotiate with terrorists. And that used to be the mantra, that used to be Israeli mantra, don't negotiate with terrorists. And I still believe you should never negotiate with terrorists. The second you start negotiating, you've shown them that they have the upper hand. Now, they think they have the upper hand because they have your people, but they really don't. Israel should have held tough. Israel should have shown extreme might, which some will argue they did. I will argue they didn't show enough might. And Israel should have continued to destroy until they found or until the hostages were released. Years ago, I floated the idea on one of my shows that every time a rocket landed in Israel, indiscriminately launched from Gaza against the Israeli civilian population, Israel should line up some bulldozers on the border of Gaza. And every time a rocket left, for every rocket that lands, Israel should move those bulldozers forward 1 foot. It doesn't matter what's in front of them, just move that line of bulldozers forward 1 foot for every rocket that lands until they get the message that we are not, Israel is not the country you want to mess with. In the Middle East, there's only one thing that everybody understands. Might makes right. Trying to impose Western democracy on Middle Eastern, Western sensibilities, sorry, not democracy, Western sensibilities on a Middle Eastern conflict is ridiculous. Trying to impose Western ideas on countries in the Middle East is ludicrous. Trying to understand how the Middle East works would probably lead to a much more successful way to resolve any issue there than to try to impose Western democratic principles on Middle Eastern countries. We saw it didn't work in Libya. We saw it didn't work in Iraq. It's not going to work in it didn't work in Afghanistan. Where all the bad guys that America claims to have thrown out all retook power, it's definitely not going to work in Israel. The Palestinian Liberation Organization, which was created in 1964 by Yasser Arafat in the Arab League, created a nation that the world was quick to embrace. And the reason they were quick to embrace this nation, this newly founded nation, this nation that never existed before, the reason they were quick to embrace this nation was because they hated the Jews. It was a profound hatred of the Jewish people that allowed them to embrace this fake nation that was created by Yasser Arafat and the Arab League and called the Palestinians. The idea that these people existed before 1964 is ludicrous and historically inaccurate. Yet we see today hundreds of thousands of people around the world who are protesting in the streets to defend a country that didn't exist, to defend a people that don't exist. It's mind-blowing, really, when you think about the propaganda and how propaganda works and understand that this whole propaganda machine that they created, that the Arab League created in the 1960s, has created this faux people who have no claim to any land because they never existed beforehand. They have no homeland and have created this claim to Israel, which is not historically accurate, not politically accurate, not legal. It's mind-blowingly dumb that so many people have bought into this false narrative and made it true. Adolf Eichmann said it once, if you repeat a line long enough, it becomes the truth. And that's how the Palestinian people were born. A lie was repeated enough times that it's become the de facto truth, even though it's still a lie. And it shocks me that intelligent people, people who should know better, people who should understand history and the historical context of everything happening in the Middle East, it shocks me, it really does, that they buy into this narrative, that they understand, that they don't understand what was going on in the time period when the Palestinians were created. So in that time period where the Palestinians were created, before the Palestinians were created in 1964, they didn't exist. Then in 1964, it was the era of all these liberation movements. So you had liberation movements popping up everywhere. The Simonese Liberation Movement, which kidnapped Patty Hearst. You had the Black Panthers that had risen up in the States. The Black Liberation Movement. You had the Jewish Defense League, which rose up in the States. The Jewish Liberation Movement. There were many, many liberation movements. They all basically had the same logo, which was a star with a fist in it. It was all essentially the same logo or if there was no star, it was just a fist. It was all essentially the same logo in different colors and different iterations, but pretty much the same logo. And these liberation organizations that popped up, what are they called, defense leagues or liberation fronts, the Arab League saw that these liberation organizations were causing disruptions in what was supposed to be civilized society. So the Black Panthers were beating people up and it was causing chaos in the streets. The Jewish Defense League were chasing after Russians and trying to get the Russian Jews out of Israel. They were chasing after Russian diplomats and Russian dance troops in New York City and causing turmoil in New York City. And so on and so forth. The Black Muslims were getting up. Malcolm X was getting up and he was talking and he was riling up the blacks to liberate themselves. And so all these liberation movements were bubbling forward. And so they saw it. The Arab League saw this as a opportunity. An opportunity to uproot a country they couldn't uproot through military intervention. So they tried with a bunch of wars to get rid of Israel in 1948, 1952. They tried a whole lot of times to get rid of Israel. And they realized that militarily they couldn't get rid of Israel. So now they decided that, with these liberation movements, we see the turmoil they're causing, the police are out there, the chaos they're causing in society. So with these kind of liberation movements, what we could do is we could create a liberation movement in Israel. We'll call it the Palestinian Liberation Movement because it was the Mandate of Palestine. So the name kind of rolls off your tongue. So let's call it the Palestinian Liberation Movement or organization. And essentially what they will do is they will destroy Israel from the inside out. So we couldn't destroy them from the outside in. We tried to destroy them from the outside in. We tried to bring in armies and destroy them militarily, but that didn't work. So now what we're going to do is we're going to try to destroy them from the inside out. And so we got to find a charismatic leader for this group. We need somebody who is really charismatic, who could really convince the world that these people were the victims. Even though they never existed before, we have to convince the world that these people existed before and they were the victims. And so they looked far and wide, and then King Abdullah in Jordan said, "Hey, wait a second, I have a cousin. He lives in Egypt. He was born and raised in Egypt. His name is Yasser Arafat. And he might be the perfect guy for you. You know, he's a militant. He's the kind of guy who'll go out and do anything." And so they brought in Yasser Arafat, and sure enough, he took on the role. And suddenly he was the head of the Palestinian Liberation Organization, an organization representing a people that never existed, claiming a land that was never theirs. And they started terrorist attacks. You don't like being searched at the airport. You don't like going through metal detectors, and you don't like them taking naked pictures of your body. Well, thank Yasser Arafat for that. He was the first plane hijacker. He was a pioneer in terrorism, in world terrorism. He killed men, women, and children indiscriminately, didn't care. He killed athletes at the Olympics, didn't care. He coordinated and orchestrated murder and terror around the world, all in the name of a people that never existed, claiming a land that was never theirs. And he was thrown out of many countries. Every country he went in, he caused chaos, and they threw him out. And so he ended up in Tunisia, and then he ended up in Jordan, then he ended up in Tunisia, then he ended up in Ramallah, and everywhere he went, chaos followed. And destruction and death was never far behind. Yasser Arafat was a master in publicity, in propaganda. He built a propaganda network like was never seen before very quickly. Created this propaganda network, got all these propagandists, these well-spoken, legitimate-looking people to speak on behalf of the Palestinian people that never existed. And they spoke very well, and they got on to major television shows across North America and across Europe. And they spoke very well, and they argued very well, and they convinced all the liberals that they were the victims, and that Israel had thrown them out of their land, when in reality that never, ever happened. And suddenly, the tide started turning for Israel. Not that the Jewish state was ever loved. It never was loved. It wasn't a love state. Nobody loved the Jews. Everybody was just happy the Jews had left their countries and gone to Israel. All the Arab countries said, "Hey, Israel exists. Get out of our country. Go to Israel. That's where you want to be? Go there." It actually shocks me when people tell me, "Hey, you're Jewish, go back to the country you came from." And I say, "Oh, Israel?" And they say, no, you can't go there. It's not yours. One second. I can't go back to Judea? I'm Jewish. That's where I'm from. I'm from Judea because I'm Jewish. But that's irrelevant. Anyway, moving on. The idea that one man could create an entire industry. He was very successful in it and made billions of dollars doing it, which he hid in a Swiss bank account and stole from his people, or the people he claimed were his. The man was brilliant when it came to marketing. He was a good marketer. And he managed to convince the world that Israel was an oppressor and he was the oppressed, and he was representing the oppressed. He convinced the world of this, and the world believed it. They bought it up. They ate it. And they ate it because they hate the Jews. They ate it because they hate the Jews. They hated the Jews before. They hated the Jews after. They hated Jews during World War II. They hated Jews after World War II. Nothing changed. The world's impression of the Jews has never changed. They tolerated the Jews in many countries, but any opportunity they had to get rid of them or kill them, they took that opportunity and they ran with it. And now we're starting to see that again in North America, where the hatred has bubbled up to the top and, you know, it's time for Jews to go. But they're not going, because Jews don't do social cues like that. They don't understand when it's time to go. They don't want to believe. We like to see people with rose-colored glasses. We like to think that people are decent human beings, that people are like us. And we realize that they're not. And by the time we realize they're not, it's too late. They've already risen up to kill us. So people in North America yelling, globalized intifada. What was the intifada? Yasser Arafat came up with this idea in the late 90s that there should be a popular uprising against the Jewish people, against the state of Israel, at least. And so what he did was he orchestrated attacks, random attacks on Jews in Israel. The idea was to kill as many Jews as possible. That was his goal, in random terror attacks. So blow up a bus, blow up a shopping mall, blow up a disco. Kill this person, kill that person, shoot someone in the street, stab somebody. Whatever it takes, that's the Intifada. Whatever it takes to get the message out there. Now, while the Intifada happened in the late 90s, the first Intifada happened in the late 90s, while this happened, the world media reported the terror attacks, the big ones, against Jews. Oh, a bus blew up in Jerusalem today. This we heard a lot. But if Israel retaliated in any way, if the Israeli army arrested an Arab or killed the terrorist, or if an Israeli, God forbid, killed the terrorist, that would become the headline news. So a perfect example was, and this is an example I used when I attacked a newspaper, when I verbally attacked a newspaper and demanded that they apologize, which they did eventually. The New York Times ran an article saying a knife-wielding Arab walked into an Israeli schoolyard and stabbed 12 kids. Now, the AP, the Associated Press, picked up the New York Times article, and their article started with five Palestinians were murdered by Israelis as tanks rolled into town after a knife-wielding Arab walked into a schoolyard. So you see how the onus of the killings. The New York Times said, an Arab went in and killed Jewish children. Everybody else said the Jews killed a bunch of Arabs after an Arab went in and killed Jewish children. So the focus of the article wasn't on the Arab killing the kids, but was on the Israelis killing the Arab. And this is how media covered Israel for decades. And it's just wrong. It's just wrong because it gives the wrong story, because the story's not true. But we continued to accept this, and the Jewish communities around the world and Israel continued to accept this, even though it wasn't true. Let's talk about Mohammed al-Dura. Does anybody remember Mohammed al-Dura? He was a little boy who got caught in a crossfire, hiding behind some garbage bin with his father, and he got shot, and there's a series of pictures, and one picture is the father's holding the kid seems dead, and it's just a big heart-wrenching scene. Where he got caught in the crossfire, and they claimed the Israelis killed him. There was a full investigation done by the State of Israel, who, by the way, the State of Israel has no problem condemning their own soldiers if they kill innocent civilians indiscriminately. They have no problem going after their own. But here we had a situation where Mohammed al-Dura was killed, and the Israeli inquest into the killing found that the that the bullet came from an Arab gun, not a Jewish gun. It was impossible where he was standing and the trajectory of the bullets. It was impossible for the Israelis to have killed this Arab kid. But it seemed irrelevant 5 years later when it was reported very, 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 very lightly that Muhammad al-Dura was actually alive. He never died and the whole thing was staged. It was another example of Pollywood, where staged murders happen all the time. Just look it up, Pollywood, on YouTube. And you can see videos of dead people coming back to life to answer their cell phones, or people getting painted or makeup, you know, changed to look like they were injured in an attack, or the same person dying in 5 different terror attacks. Just check it out. It's actually pretty funny to watch. But it's believed by the masses because the news media covers it. They run the stories. Is there a solution? Is there an escape from this? No, not really. We have to hold steadfast. We have to support Israel. And we have to insist that Israel be as tough as they can be and take out the terrorists and protect themselves and their citizenship. That's what we have to insist on. That's what we have to hope for. That's what we have to pray for. And we know that Jews and Israel are on the right side. We know that Jews and Israel are on their own land and that nobody else has a claim to that land. And we must proclaim it loudly and clearly wherever we go. And don't let the liars win the war. Not the war in Israel, not the war on the ground, and not the publicity war, and not the war online, not the war on TikTok, not the war on YouTube, not the war anywhere. Don't let the liars and the haters win. Fight back. Be brave. I'm Howie Silberger. This is Political Hitman on Israel News Talk Radio. Thank you for joining me. I'll see you again next show.